Are we starting already? Okay.
Whenever you're ready, but you've got 2 minutes extra. You can do breathing exercise or whatever.
Yeah, I actually do have my speech on paper. It's mostly because I might occasionally have stage fright and forget what I want to say. It's not because I don't care. I do actually care. Although, you know, the main person who did all the job on open source is sitting over there last mandate, Marcel, my colleague, who was just in this room. I will mention him, I think, one more time in the speech, actually. So just so that you know who I'm talking about. But being a pirate from the Pirate Party, naturally, this topic is very close to my heart. It's just, you know, talking about European legislation and sort of setting the scene for the debate afterwards, which is much more important, and with people who are much smarter than I am and much more well-versed in the topic, is the important part. But you will have to bear with me for like 5 minutes before I finish my 3 pages of speech. And I do hope that you will not be too bored and that I will set up the scene nicely into what was done in terms of legislation regarding open source in the European Union and what still needs to be done and what's your role. Yes, your. It's not just mine, you know, because I need open source community to take an active part in this so that we can actually make change. And I will speak about why. So with this, I think I wasted my 2 minutes that I had before jumping into the speech. And also I think we are way ahead of starting, so people will be coming in. But I will not let that disturb me, of course. So again, thank you for having me here today. I am very delighted to speak about this topic. I am very scared for any questions, but I am mentally prepared for that. Of course, I actually am trying to record here today a video with a couple of random people. It's very difficult actually to come to someone in an open source event such as FOSDEM and ask them to say something on the camera because there are two types of people, right? One of them are very shy and don't want to answer any questions. And the second part is very privacy prone. So they're like, oh, I would be on video on internet with my face exposed. No, you know, so that was a difficult ordeal, but I got a couple of answers. And I love that one of them actually said something that I have literally in my second paragraph. And that person said that open source is not just technological phenomenon, but philosophy, you know, and I had it in my speech and I was like, that's great. I agree with it. It is philosophy because it embodies like some principles. He hates that idea. A couple of the principles are like collaboration, transparency, and fostering innovation. And what my role here is today is to set the scene of how the open source philosophy influence EU legislation. So one of the most notable examples that I have to start with is the European Union public license. It's an old one. I don't remember it myself that much. I'm very young, you know. It was launched in 2007. No, I'm not that young, but, you know, 2007 I actually was 14, so I did not care that much. Although I already at that time had Linux, Ubuntu, and it was made in Rastafarian colors. And when I look at the screenshots from back then now, I'm like, Marketa, cringe. It was horrible. But, you know, 2007, it was, of course, the first European free open source software license. And it was drafted from the open source community's inputs. And it has been translated into all of the EU languages. So I think that was already a great start of what can be achieved when the open source community goes into the EU legislation. And let's talk also about more recent cases that maybe some of us were part of. You and we have been part of shaping the EU's policies on artificial intelligence, data governance, digital markets, of course, safety and cybersecurity. Me, myself, I am not part of most of what I explained, just the cybersecurity part, but I already got so many important inputs from you on NIS2 legislation and various cybersecurity reports. Of course, whoever focuses here on cybersecurity knows how European institutions themselves are screwed, but we are trying to change that. Hey. So the other legislations that were passed through and were very important was the Product Liability Directive, where we successfully managed to exempt and that will be biggest part of open source community inputs usually, don't count us in. You know, we don't want to be part of this, but it's really important. So exempt open source from to avoid any liability of individual contributors. And of course, I must also mention, as I mentioned artificial intelligence, the AI Act, where again, after a very tough fight, open source benefits from certain protection, provided that the licensing and transparency are appropriate. Originally, and I will sort of tell you a little thing, I was helped with this speech by my advisors, and they put here Cyber Resilience Act. Like, yeah, there are also many open source exemptions. Honestly, I crossed it out, because I do agree with my advisors. I do think that CRA is actually not as bad for open source community as is generally said. But you know, if I said it like that without any context and explanation, then most of the community would be like, what the hell? You know, CRA is clusterfucked. But I wanted to mention it, that again, you were part of the discussion. To continue. Yes, this one. I, of course, don't want to bring the wood into the forest, as we say in Czechia, but I also want to talk about why your input, the open source community, is important for EU legislation and for anything we do. And I want to do it because these successes that I mentioned in the product liability and the liability in the AI Act, maybe even CRA, they were never free. You know, when we went into the negotiation room, we were usually facing a tough opposition to any ideas like that. So what we usually brought to the table is, guys, open source really drives innovation. Because if you allow people to modify, to access, to distribute, to share software, then of course it fosters a culture of experimentation and improvement, continuous improvement. That's nothing you can do with vendor lock-ins. And of course this is very important for me, not only as a pirate, but as a policymaker, because I am trying really relentlessly to push back against the idea that additional protection of intellectual work will lead to more and better innovation. This is the most common argument I hear. And it's not from policymakers, it's from business, of course. Secondly, open source, of course, promotes digital sovereignty. Because if we use it and contribute to the open source software, we can reduce dependencies on proprietary technologies. We can enhance our cybersecurity. That was my biggest point. Like, if I tell you nobody understands this concept, or why cybersecurity is better with open source, I would be understating the situation that's going on. Because, of course, immediately Microsoft on somebody swoops in and is like, no, you know, if you can't see into it, even the adversaries can't see into it, so you are better protected. Yeah, of course, Microsoft, go home. And also, like, it is very particularly the case for public and state administrations. And this is where I want to bring Marcel into the picture, my colleague from the previous mandate, because he launched the FOSEPS project in order to identify and promote the use of relevant open source initiatives for public administrations. And we have just, I don't know where he's sitting, but had a discussion in front of this door with a European Commission person. And we've discussed that they were trying to put together a list of open source technologies that are being used by various institutions, and that it was a very difficult ordeal. And I was like, why, you don't know what you're using? And no, that was actually not the case. And it's still not the case for many institutions. Of course, Parliament is sort of at the forefront. You know, we are nice and all. But the Council, black box, little black box, including, of course, whatever they are using. Thirdly, and this is actually, I think, important point, and one person also answered this for my video, is that open source is actually a powerful economic driver. I asked the question, like, what do you think is the biggest myth about open source? And the person answered that you can't make money with it. You know, and I do agree, and her answer like supported it. It really enables European businesses, especially SMEs, to compete on global scale, because then you can provide cutting-edge technologies and reduce software costs. And I also have one study here, which says, and that's crazy, that when Europe invested 1 billion in Europe in open source software in 2018. It brought positive impact on economy between 65 to 95 billion euro. You know, so if those numbers are not persuading the policymakers, then I don't know what else. So of course, given these benefits, it's vital that the open community, open source community's voice is heard in Brussels. And I do think that, you know, currently the EU is at a critical juncture in terms of where it will lead with its digital market. Hopefully one day single digital market. We are getting there. But of course, for this to happen, we need to build bridges between the open source community and EU policymakers. So sort of what I am here for. I am already the bridge, but I am a very small part of the bridge, of course. And I think that it involves creating platforms. So hello, FOSDEM, thank you for creating this platform. Also fostering mutual understanding. And you know, this sounds like a nice phrase from ChatGPT. It was not written by ChatGPT, by the way. But I don't think it's just a phrase, but little need, because I remember how much work me, and I have this example of Marcel again, had to put into explaining to our colleagues what is interoperability, you know, and it's quite an easy concept, actually. It's a horrible word, but quite an easy concept. And so, like, it was months before they understood it, you know, so mutual communication and understanding is a need, because people don't understand open source community. They don't even know what is vendor lock-in, although they literally are locked in the vendors. So of course, it can get challenging, but I think it's very important. And I think that it is even more important seeing the misunderstandings from policymakers regarding vital things for open source community. And of course, nothing of this will happen automatically. Open source has made great strides in the EU, as I mentioned, but every success has been the persistent persistency, advocacy, and the willingness to show up, to bring the arguments to the table, and to just help, because the pushbacks are real, and the victories were never easy ones. They were really fought for, not handed to us. So that's why your involvement matters, and so thus I encourage you to definitely keep contributing, keep engaging. If you did not do it, then start contributing and start engaging, and hopefully then we can have a future for open source in Europe, and maybe be an inspiration, because I don't want to get too political, but in terms of the global open source community, I will not probably even speak about China. And I think I can't even speak now about the US, you know. So Europe is the last standing man, the last standing island of open source, where we can be at the forefront, and we can show the good example that everybody can follow. So thank you, and of course, I look forward to any questions, but mostly to the next panel that will talk in much more depth about everything I just said. Thanks.